Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Players, ground staff and spectators have to contend with sweltering conditions at Wimbledon, with this year's opening day being the hottest on record. Air temperature on the grounds reached 32.3 degrees on Monday. Players were given ice packs and cold towels, plenty of water to help regulate their temperature during the changeovers. Well, yesterday Coco Gauff became the biggest seed to fall across the opening 2 days of action. Fresh from her second Grand Slam win at the French Open, she looked a shadow of her best self only a month on from that triumph. She was beaten in straight sets by Diana Yastremska. Russell Fuller is with us, the BBC's tennis correspondent, and he joins me on the line. Hello, Russell.
Good morning, Claire.
Well, tell me about the conditions, first of all, before we speak about poor old Coco Gauff, because it's been really tough for them out there, hasn't it?
It's been very tough for the spectators, and I know you'll say the spectators don't have to play. The only reason I say it's maybe not quite as tough for the players as you might imagine is that they are very, very used to playing in super hot conditions. Now, it has been unpleasant when the temperatures are 2 degrees Celsius. That was not a great deal of fun. Grass is an easier surface to play on than the hard courts. It's really important.
Russell, do you know what? We're going to have to try and get you on a better line. Maybe it's the heat that has dealt us that problem. But not to worry, because I have tennis enthusiast Aileen Hickey here, sitting here in front of me, who's actually wearing her tennis gear today. Not because we're talking about Wimbledon, because you've just come off the court, haven't you?
I did. I played a little game of tennis at 8:30 this morning, and there would be nobody confusing me with any sort of a Wimbledon tennis player, I can tell you.
But you are a huge fan, aren't you? And Wimbledon in particular.
I am a huge fan. So, like, since I was a child, you know, I would have been stuck watching, you know, the small screen and the old television at home, watching Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert, Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe, you know, Jimmy Connors, all the biggies at the time, absolutely gripped by since I was 6 or 7 years of age. And I did actually play tennis as a child. And my one big dream was always to go to Wimbledon. And it was kind of, you know, a huge bucket list thing, but I didn't actually think I'd get there. So over the years, I did go to other tennis opens. I went to the Foro Italico in Rome, and I've watched, you know, it's not a Grand Slam, but it is a very good tennis event. But 2 years ago, my dream came true, and it was practically better than my wedding day. I got to go to Wimbledon on the 9th of July, 2023. A friend of mine got tickets, and the person she was bringing couldn't go. So I got a last minute call up to go. Over I went, and I have to say, now, not using too many tennis puns here, but I had a ball.
Yes, go on, keep going. I don't mind the puns.
It was ace. Yeah. I loved it. I was served everything I wanted, and there was lots of other advantages.
So
I have a few more to go as well. But anyway, I got there about 10:30 in the morning, and I'm not the most emotional person, but I actually cried as I walked into.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. I bawled my. I didn't expect to cry, but I actually did cry when I looked up and I saw, you know, the sign and the All England, lawn tennis club. I actually did cry.
See, there's a whole generation of us, and I think it's because RTE always showed the tennis. Isn't that it?
I would be stuck watching it. And actually, my mother would be kind of saying, get out, go and do something.
Because it was summer holidays.
But I literally couldn't take my eyes off it. And it was, you know, I mean, you know, there's players that you don't hear of anymore, like Hanna Mandlikova and all those who were playing at the time. But, you know, we were literally gripped by it. So, you know, to actually be there, I mean, and, you know, I can't quite explain, but, you know, there really is an aura. Like, it really is the holy grail of tennis, you know, when you walk in there. I mean, you're walking around the grounds and there's, you know, the statue of Arthur Ashe, and, you know, there's all these huge memorabilia, and, you know, the signs with, again, all the names of all the greats on them, you know, John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors and, you know, Chris Evert and Venus and Serena, and, you know, you're just overwhelmed. I mean, and, you know, we were very lucky enough that day, you know, I saw Djokovic play, I saw Sinner play.
Oh, you did very well.
Yeah, so, you know, you're kind of touching something that you don't even expect to touch. It does actually feel quite surreal. I mean, even when I left that night and we watched all three matches. You get to see three matches in the same day on Centre Court. It was with these very special debenture tickets, and we
must have been there for 12 hours, were you?
We were there from 10:30 to 9:30 that night, 11 o'clock.
Yeah. And tell me this, is it very fancy and grand?
Yes. In one, it is. Now, I mean, everyone is dressed up. Everyone makes an effort. So, you know, all the ladies are wearing very kind of long, flowy dresses.
See, this would stress me out now. How do you know what to wear?
Well, to be honest, I'd say I spent 3 nights trying on every single thing I found in the wardrobe before I went. But I was happy in the end because you have to be wearing reasonably flat shoes because you're up and down steps, you know, to get into the stands. And again, it was very hot that time as well. It was, as I say, it was July 2023. It was very hot. So, you know, you're expecting that you need to be cool. Now,
So you have to be comfortable, you have to stay cool, your shoes can't be too high, but you also have to look fabulous in a demure, stylish sort of a way.
Yes, and obviously I complied with all of that. I looked fabulous in a demure, stylish sort of way. I wore kind of a halter neck long flowy dress. I was very happy with it. Now, my feet were still sore at the end of the day. You're encouraged not to wear a hat because you can't obscure the spectators behind you. So no matter how hot it is, I mean, I think that protocol is breached a couple of times by Meghan Markle, and I think even Princess Kate herself breached that protocol once.
By wearing a hat.
But you're encouraged not to because you don't want to be blocking out other people's view. But people are dressed up. And again, that adds to the sense of, you know, propriety about the whole thing. I mean, because again, I suppose it's special because it's the oldest Grand Slam in the world. I mean, Wimbledon started in 1877. It's the only Grand Slam still played on grass. And it's the only Grand Slam that the players still have to wear white. And the reason they still have to wear white is because it was originally brought in because if they wore coloured clothing, there might be sweat stains on their clothing and it would look unsightly. But that rule has remained. And then you still have all the, you know, the traditions like the strawberries and cream. And we had the strawberries and cream. And again, you know, I was kind of looking it up. So, you know, I think there's something like 200,000 portions of strawberries and cream served over the 2 weeks of Wimbledon, which is something like 40,000 kilograms of strawberries and 10,000 litres of cream that are served in those 2 weeks. So, but again, you have to have them. I mean, it literally is part of the tradition.
It's the law, Wimbledon law. Yeah. Well, Russell is back with us now. If you can find a pair of headphones there, you can stick them on Aileen to heal Russell. So you've got no sweaty tennis players, Russell, in Wimbledon. Well, we can't see that they're sweaty anyway.
They may not look as if they're sweating, and I probably shouldn't give you the wrong impression because it has been blisteringly hot by London standards, and it's been unpleasant for the players as well at times. The point I was trying to make before technology let me down was that they are used to playing in even more extreme heat. The Australian Open in Melbourne, temperatures can be in the upper 30s, low 40s. The humidity in New York for the US Open in late August, early September is really, really, really unpleasant. And Florida is another venue that tennis visits, and the humidity there is very, very high as well. So I wouldn't say they're enjoying a respite from that heat at Wimbledon this year. Far from it. It has been unpleasant. But again, playing on a grass surface is more forgiving than playing on the hard concrete courts where the heat really reflects from the court into the players, and that can be a deeply unpleasant experience, especially when they're playing 4 or 5 hour matches, which is quite common on the men's tour.
Yeah, but as you say, they're accustomed to it to some extent. So let's get back to the action and what happened. And I was talking about Coco Gauff, who went out yesterday. She had a tough enough draw, but she would have been expected to navigate that, right?
Yes, it was a very nasty first round draw against a player who has proven her pedigree on grass recently. Diana Yastremska, by reaching the final in Nottingham. She's been in a Grand Slam semi-final at the Australian Open before, but this wasn't quite the Coco Gauff we'd normally expect to see, even though Yastremska played an extraordinary match. And it just goes to show how difficult it is to try and win the French Open on clay and then Wimbledon on grass when they are just 3 weeks apart. And in Coco Gauff's case, she decided to go back to New York, not really to celebrate the French Open title, thought she would put that off until the end of the season, but still to get to terms with the magnitude of winning her second Grand Slam title on the clay. And then she opted to play in Berlin, lost in the first round, and then has lost in the first round at Wimbledon. And she says it's a really difficult conundrum to juggle with, and I think she will learn from this. But it's such a life-changing moment almost, winning a Grand Slam title. It is the culmination of 2 weeks incredibly hard work. It's what these players dream about when they're growing up. And you win one, it takes some getting used to the idea. And suddenly, 3 weeks later, the next Grand Slam is upon them.
Yeah, you're thrown back in again. And someone who's used to that feeling is Novak Djokovic. But was he sick yesterday? Was it a tummy bug he said he had?
Yeah, he said it was a tummy bug, which he seemed to recover from relatively quickly and was always in control of that match against Alexandra Muller. Did drop the second set on a tie break, but even though he was a little bit under the weather, and he's very experienced at dealing with these uncomfortable situations, he came through in four sets and he won at about 10:30 in the evening. And he will be very relieved not to have to come back to finish his match today, given that his second round match against Britain's Dan Evans will be tomorrow. The curfew remains at 11 o'clock. Players cannot play after 11 o'clock at Wimbledon. So had that gone five sets, then Djokovic would have been brought back today. But I think he has weathered that storm. It sounds like it was a fairly minor problem, which is not going to hold him back too much as the fortnight progresses.
Wouldn't imagine so. Not where Novak Djokovic is concerned. Are you missing the line judges, Russell? They're gone, aren't they, in favour of a Hawkeye system?
I do quite miss them because of the human drama and the human interaction and the fact that players and line judges may sometimes disagree. I can understand why we are moving towards the technology. It's been inevitable for a while. Players broadly feel that the robots, the computers, the AI is going to be more accurate than human beings. But yes, we have lost a bit of tradition. We've lost a lot of colour, certainly from a radio point of view, when you're describing the action as I do. It's just one extra dimension, isn't it, to be able to bring in what a line judge looks like, or the fact they've got a very powerful voice, or the way they very theatrically fling out their left arm to signal that the ball was wide. All this colour from centre
disappeared. And you nearly disappeared again there, Russell, but we're getting the sense certainly of what you're saying. Are the queues still there? I have a listener in touch who's planning to queue up tomorrow, or next week rather, to try and get tickets. The heat isn't keeping people away, is it?
Well, right now, having moved out into the garden to try and get a slightly better signal before heading into Wimbledon, which is just 10 minutes down the road from the house we're staying in, it's light rain. The forecast is pretty good, I think, for the rest of the day and actually for the next couple of days. So I don't think people are going to have to put up with that 30 degree heat again. But you do need to get there very early if you want to get tickets for Centre Court and probably even arrive and camp out overnight, because there's a certain number of tickets. I think it's 500 that are available to people in the queue for Centre Court, and then other tickets for other courts and grounds passes. So I did it when I was younger. It's a fantastic experience. It does mean you're a little bit tired and groggy when you take your place on Centre Court or wherever, but it is very much part of the experience. And that queue for the first 8 days of the championship certainly is thriving. There's a serious number of people. Over 10,000 people the other day for the opening day.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Russell, thank you so much. And thanks for moving around to try and get that line working for us. Russell Fuller there, BBC tennis correspondent. You're not a queuer, Aileen, are you? Well, you obviously didn't have to queue for that experience in 2023, but would you do that? Would you queue?
I 100% would. I mean, I suppose the only reason I haven't queued is that I would have had to go to England to queue and risk not getting a ticket. I have entered the public ballot every year. The public ballot opens in September every year, and, you know, the same as buying any concert ticket. You know, I've pressed the button and got nowhere. I mean, I don't think that's going to be my first and last Wimbledon. I will get there, and if it means flying to England and having to queue, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. One thing Russell didn't mention there is, you know, aside from the heat and all the rest of it, I think it does take a huge mental toll on the players. I mean, I don't know if you heard Zverev, which I'm probably very badly mispronouncing there, speaking last night after his loss. And, you know, he's the men's number three, and I've seen him playing a couple of times. He's a German player, but he spoke last night about kind of the loneliness and the isolation of being on court and, you know, dealing with his mental health afterwards. And he's far from the only tennis professional who has spoken before about the toll it takes on their mental health.
No, tennis as a sport.
As a sport, yeah. No, I suppose a lot of sports take a toll on people, on professional players' mental health. But, mm-hmm. you know, it was interesting that he spoke about it last night. And as I say, he's not the first player, you know, to speak on that. But, you know, he's the world number three, and he was knocked out yesterday, and he was clearly very upset.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lonely game. There's so much pressure on you, particularly in the fishbowl of the big Grand Slams. Yeah. You know, it's tough going.
One of the best books I've ever read is Andre Agassi's autobiography, Open. It's a fantastic book, but it really does give you an insight into the life of a professional tennis player. And I suppose even over here,
he sort of hated
Conor
it.
Ireland
he hated
wrote,
it, didn't
but
he?
Conor Ireland wrote a book.
Oh, that's
here.
On my summer reading
yeah,
list.
Yeah. Another fantastic book. So, you know, I mean, it's a really interesting sport to watch and, you know, to participate in is great as well at the lower levels. But, you know, you really get a feel for what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. We better let you off now to go and watch it because that's what you'll be doing for the day, right?
Well, I do have to do a bit of work as well. But in between the work, I will be watching it.
Aileen, thanks so much. thanks for coming in. And also to Russell Fuller there as well. Still to come in the next hour, George Gibney was arrested in the United States yesterday. We're going to speak to Mark Horgan, who made the podcast about the former swimming coach. Travelling solo, we're going to hear about holidaying alone and what restaurant owners make of a table for one. And the Waterford librarians will be back with us, and they're going to have a list of books to keep your children entertained this summer. All on the way.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.